October 24th, 2019, via Chief Rindavan, and we're looking at Canto 6, Chapter 18, Text 1 through 36. So, the main focus here is that when we're angry and we're lamenting, we will come up with very good reasons to do selfish, deceitful, and hurtful things. When we're controlled by anger, lamentation, and other negative emotions, we will rationalize and justify so many reasons to do selfish, duplicitous, deceitful, and harmful things. Now, these particular verses are a real study of psychology with what's going on with Diti, and we'll see tomorrow morning what's going on with Indra, which is also similar. This is fascinating stuff. Why do we do what we do? And if you have some desire to make friends with your mind, this is a good section of the Bhagavatam. All right. First, we have our background information. We have these whole genealogical tables, so we're just going to look at them briefly. Something funny in text 4. Look what happens in text 4. What happens in text 4? Interesting. The last statement of text 4 says,
Bhrigu the son of Brahma took birth again in the
baby. Yeah, why did Bhrigu have to take birth again? No explanation given. And somehow he didn't get to ride out the whole universe as Lord Brahma's son. And he had to die and take birth again. Somewhere else? Let's look at text 6. Text 6 proper talks about reproductive technology, assisted reproductive technology. And, you know, people are so proud today that they have their, you know, donor sperm and IVF and all this stuff. But there was kind of pretty far out reproductive technology going on thousands of years ago. So that's Ridhan Nandamar said that the modern clomid was the ancient payasa. You know, so they had all these interesting things. If you couldn't have a child naturally, or I mean, here we have semen left in a pot that they are able to turn into a child. So that's pretty clever. That's more clever than the modern scientists can do. And of course, modern reproductive technology almost always involves a lot of violence and a lot of pain and a lot of harm. People may think things like IVF are simple. They're not. If you actually read what goes on in IVF, especially what's done to the woman, it's heavy. It's really, really intense. You know, a lot of women are told now, don't marry young, don't have a child young, first find yourself, find your career, get married when you're 25, 30, 35. And then have a baby, and it's not a problem. And they don't tell women the chances of having a baby are very small. After 40, it's like 5% chance that you're going to have a child naturally. And IVF, you only have a 2% chance of having a child. And they really have to mess with your body to do IVF. It's a heavy, heavy, heavy thing that they have to do to your body, and it generally doesn't even work. So this is, you know, modern technology. We're going to improve over biology, but it's at a high price. It's at a very high price. Whereas formerly they could do all these things, but they didn't destroy the body. You know, it wasn't. And today, reproductive technology, they usually produce more embryos than they use, and they kill the other embryos, and, you know, or they'll inject the woman with like 4 embryos, and then if they all start growing, they kill some of them, they abort some of them. And it's really something. You know, you just think, oh yeah, yeah, women are getting pregnant with IVF at 45. It's not so simple. Yeah, we all kinds of far out things in the Bhagavatam. You know, later on there's this one king who gets pregnant by drinking the payasa, and they have to do a cesarean section to deliver the child. That's, I think, in the 9th canto. all these amazing things that went on in the Bhagavatam. So these things that go on in modern society, you know, in the ninth canto also you have women changing into men and men changing into women. You know, so you, all these things, it's not that these are new in 2019, but it's that the people who could do them in the past had a much higher technology, and they had a technology that wasn't harmful and that wasn't violent. Whereas today, the technology that they use is very violent and very, very damaging. Just a little note about teaching. I assume that most of you in a Bhakti Vaibhava are also preachers or hope to be preachers. And we see in text 9 that Sukadeva does something called foreshadowing, where he says, "This I'm going to talk about this later." And remember, we were talking this morning about salting the oats, making people thirsty. And so Sukadeva Goswami, sometimes he mentions something to prompt a question from Parikit, and sometimes he actually says, "Well, I'll talk about this later." If ever you're going to give a multi-part seminar, if you're ever going to give a multi-part seminar as a teacher, always do this. Always tell people what you're going to talk about in your upcoming seminars and give them some reason to come back. We talked about in Hiranyakashipu's family, I just think this is, it's fascinating, right, that Prahlad is the uncle of Rahu. You know, and of course we know that that what's his name?
The Lord's sister was Sinika.
Yes, which is also very interesting. And then we have as well it's not mentioned here. He must be from another wife, but there's Hiranyakashipu also has a son, Kalanimi, who was killed by Lord Vishnu. And it's not mentioned here, only Kayadu.
He becomes Kamsa.
And then Kalanimi's 6 sons did austerities to please Lord Brahma without Hiranyakashipu's permission. And so he cursed them to be killed by their father. And they become the 6 sons of Devaki, who were then killed by Kamsa. So this is all quite interesting. Panchajanya is, of course, the conch demon. We have the note in 19, text 19, that demons can become demigods. That you can be, you know, racially a demon, and you can become a demigod. And so this sort of introduction leads to Parikit's question in 21. He said, "I don't understand what's going on here," in 20 and 21, where he says that they must have had a demoniac mentality. How could they become demigods? Did they do rituals or pious acts? Now, this is interesting because we just had the story of a demon, Vitrasura, who was actually a devotee. So we just have this example that if you get a demoniac body by curse or by something, you still have the capacity to act beyond that body. That spirituality is not constrained by the body. Now it's interesting, 21, what's interesting about 21?
What? You're asking us?
Yes.
Converted them to demigods.
Huh?
Converted them to demigods.
21, text
21. I should say that he's knowing his audience.
Yeah, well, it's his fellow participants.
Yes.
So Parikit says, the other people here also want to know. How did he know that? I don't know, did they have breaks? I mean, Parikit didn't eat, sleep, or drink for 7 days, but I don't know about everybody else, they weren't going to die. So maybe they had breaks. And they talked about it on the break time. I don't know.
Breakout
sessions. Huh? Breakout
sessions.
Yeah. Well, just like today's Ekadasi, so maybe some of you are fasting, but, you know, not everybody is fasting. So maybe Parikit heard them talk about it at lunch or something. I don't know. Somehow he knew what everybody else wanted to know. So I thought that was interesting. And then in text 22... So So this is also important for teachers. Praise good questions. Praise good questions. One thing you want to do as a teacher is you want to encourage people to ask questions. Who was upset because his student didn't ask any questions? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He said, why didn't you ask any questions? And, yes?
Yeah, I want to know why Indra converted the Maruts to demigods.
Why did he?
Why did he?
You'll find that out. Stay tuned for our next episode tomorrow morning. Seriously. That's when we will find that out. So here we see the encouraging of good questions. If you want people to ask good questions, you need to encourage when people ask good questions. If you want people to ask what they really have doubts about and what they really want to know, encourage good questions. And encourage questions that come to the heart of the matter. Do we have a lot of questions in the Bhagavatam that express doubt? Sometimes even the question to really question the speaker. Like I was just reading in the fifth canto, wait a minute, how can the sun be on the right and the left at the same time? So there are these kind of questions. And if you want to be a teacher following Sukadeva Goswami, you thank people for asking those questions, don't criticize them. One of the main reasons why I left the religion of my family and joined the Hare Krishna movement is that I was criticized by my religious teacher for asking questions. I said, it says this and this and this in the Bible, it doesn't make any sense to me, please explain it. They said, be quiet, don't ask those questions. That's it. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to find God someplace else, if you don't know. I was studying at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York City, one of the top places of Jewish theological learning in the world, and I'm asking about the giving of the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, the pivotal event in Jewish theology, and they told me, don't ask these questions. So I left. I left. Like, you don't know the answer, I'm going. So here it was saying they appreciated the questions because it was a small number of words and with meaningful inquiries. So especially you want to praise questions that are meaningful, and if they're concisely asked, that's even better. Oh, it's always funny when people say, I have a small question. It's one of the funniest things I ever hear. What does that mean? Does that mean it's a question that has a short answer, or does it mean I can ask the question in 10 seconds or less? You know, sometimes people's like, what's the meaning of Varnashram? I have a small question. What's the meaning of Varnashram? So that's not a... Okay. So if we have time, and we probably won't, we might look at what are great questions, neutral questions, and poor questions, and how should we respond to each of them, but I doubt we'll get to that. We spent twice as long on this as I had anticipated. So, but that would be a nice exercise to do sometime. And again, something you could do as a teacher of Shastra is you could take statements like this from the Shastra and do that kind of exercise. What are great Shastra questions? What are neutral questions, neither great nor bad? And what are terrible questions? Prabhupada says, blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Bhagavad Gita 434 purport. So it's good for us as participants to know what is a great question, what is an okay question, and what is a terrible question. And it's good for us to also know this as teachers and to know how to respond to each of these. How do I respond to the terrible questions? There are sometimes terrible questions. All right. let's go on to the real essence here, at least what I picked up that I felt. And in 36 verses, you can find a lot of stuff, but what I felt was really what was very important. So, Diti here gets overwhelmed. She gets overwhelmed with anger and lamentation. Overwhelmed. Text 23, Jwalanti. She's burning. So those of you who studied Manashiksha, what's the verse about burning?
The donkey urine.
The donkey urine. If you haven't read Manashiksha, I have a few copies here for only 800 rupees. Special, Indian price. Actually, really true. The donkey urine is burning. Donkey urine is where, by Raghunathas Goswami, saying where you think you're getting purified and you're not. You think that you're getting clean. Like we take a bath, we think we're getting clean. That's the idea of a bath, to get clean. But instead of water coming out of your tap, if it was donkey urine, you wouldn't be getting very clean. Look, in many parts of the world, the water is contaminated. And sometimes the water is so contaminated that even taking a bath in it can make you sick. So the symptom of a donkey urine bath is this burning sensation in the mind that instead of joy and peace and satisfaction and equanimity, like we talked about Chitraketu's wonderful qualities in this morning about equanimity, instead of that kind of equanimity and acceptance, Diti has exactly the opposite. Was Chitraketu's kid murdered? Oh yeah. Diti's sons were murdered too. Chitraketu's son, was he guilty of anything?
No.
No, and he was just a little kid. What about Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyakshu? Were they guilty of anything?
Yes.
Yeah, they were guilty. And they were fighting. Yeah, they were powerful people. They were fighting. They weren't just some baby lying in their sleep. Of course, Chitraketu didn't respond with equanimity and acceptance when his child died. He responded with equanimity and acceptance later to being cursed. But Diti's far worse than Chitraketu in her response here. She's burning with emotion. She's burning with emotion. How do we get overwhelmed? How is it that we get overwhelmed? Something happens that we feel is unfair, unjust, not right, not what we had in mind, not what should have happened, not what we expected.
Because we think we deserve more.
We think we deserve more.
Expectations.
Expectations. We think we know what's best for us. We decide what other people should or should not do. Anger and grief. Now, we're all going to get anger and grief come into our bodies and minds. Bhagavad Gita 14, 22 to 24. We will get anger and grief come into our bodies and minds. You can be a pure devotee, it's still going to happen. But what is Diti doing to this anger and grief?
She's feeding it.
She's pouring fuel on it. What does an enlightened person do when anger and grief enters the body and mind?
We read in the previous chapter about Shabbat and Prophecy was being passed. So if somebody is eating the astralas, they lose his intelligence. They lose intelligence.
They lose their intelligence, yes. But what should we do? What should we do when anger and grief enter our body and mind? It will happen. 14, 22 to 25, it will happen. What do we do? What should we do as devotees?
Speak to devotees.
What?
Open your mind and speak.
If that's one possibility. What else?
Take shelter of Krishna.
Take shelter of Krishna. What do you do with that anger and lamentation?
Shri Prabhupada says, all the devotees should not yes, to other.
Well, what do you do with it?
If sometimes if we need to be envious with a lot of things also, meaning we don't want to be.
Okay, let's talk about when we shouldn't be, because 99.99999999999% of the time, we're not supposed to be angry and lamenting with other people. What should we do with the anger and grief that enters our body and mind? What do we do with it?
Transform it to love.
What? Transform it to love. Okay. How?
Look in the positive of the person. Appreciating the person.
I think that's like step two or three. What are you going to do first?
Do not contemplate more on it.
What do you do? Thank you. 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 Acknowledge it.
Okay. Yes.
Okay? A lot of what you just talked about, your risk aversion. A lot of the other suggestions people made, you're risking aversion. You don't want attachment, you don't want aversion. Attachment and aversion both feed it. Think of it like this. This is attachment, this is aversion. This is attachment, this is aversion. What am I doing in both cases? I'm holding it. Okay, the first thing is acknowledgement. Acknowledging that it is there and that it is not me. I was just this morning talking to one of my godbrothers who says that he's now able to identify thoughts and feelings as not him. He says he actually perceives them as being in a particular geographical location almost. Think of anger and lamentation as a Vrindavan monkey. How many times during the day do you see the monkeys? So many times. Do you pick them up?
No.
Do you feed them?
No.
Do you hit them?
No.
What do you do with them?
Ignore them.
Do you know they're there?
Yes.
Why do you have to know they're there?
So that we are aware.
Why do you need to be aware?
Because of my
question. They're dangerous. What happens if you put food for the monkeys outside where you live?
They will come
every day.
And what will they do?
Try to come in.
Somebody besides these three women who were the most like active in the class, what will the monkeys, which is lovely, but somebody else never gets a chance to say anything. What will happen if you feed the monkeys when they come to your house? I speak from experience here.
They may enter your
house. Huh? They may enter the house. What else might they do?
They
may attack you.
They may attack you. What else?
They may pass the mess.
They may pass stool.
They come again.
They will come again, but they'll be destructive. They broke our water tank.
And they will try to become friends and try to...
Yes, yes. So you don't feed the monkeys. They're very dangerous. You don't feed them. You don't try to make them your friends. But do you hurt them?
No.
Whose monkeys are they?
Krishna's.
So who should take care of them?
Krishna.
Krishna. Are they my monkeys?
No.
No. There's a saying, not my monkeys, not my circus. Have you ever heard this?
Yes.
It's a way of saying, it's not my business. We see something going on in the world and we say, not my monkeys, not my circus. This is what we should do with emotions like anger, grief, envy. All these emotions, fear, that's Krishna's energy. Is it Krishna's energy?
Yes.
Does he say this in the Bhagavad Gita? Fear and fearlessness come from me. All these things come from me. Is it Krishna's energy? Are they destructive? Fear, anger, envy, are they destructive?
Yes.
Yes, just like monkeys.
Yes, I see Manikana seeing people buy bananas and give to the monkeys as service.
Jai, don't do that. If you're going to do that, make sure it's nowhere near your house. Don't ever feed a monkey by your house. Or anyone else's house that you like. If you want to get back at your enemies, like Diti, then you can feed the monkeys by the house of your enemies. These negative emotions are Krishna's monkeys. Are the monkeys also cute?
Yes.
Are they also engaging?
Yes.
Do we feel tempted to look at them? And they're funny. Do we feel tempted to look at them sometimes?
Yes.
All right. These negative emotions are exactly like that. Look at me, 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 look at me. And that's what Diti did. She looked at them. And she fed them. What should she have done?
Acknowledge
them, and then ignore them. Hey monkeys, you have your life, I have my life. You belong to Krishna, I'm not feeding you, I'm not hurting you, I'm doing my business. And they will go away. Anger, grief, fear will go away by itself if you don't feed it or push it away. What this means is not rationalizing. But let's look first what happens when we feed them. She becomes overwhelmed. And what does she do when she becomes overwhelmed? Look at this next verse. How can I rest with a peaceful mind? What does she think she has to do to be peaceful?
Kill Indra.
She has to kill Indra. Like, whoa. We often think like that. This person made me angry. This person made me upset. I've got to neutralize this person somehow. We don't usually want to kill them. Sometimes we wish they would just die. But we don't generally want to kill them, but we want to neutralize them somehow. We want to take away their threat. Now look what she says here. Indra's very much fond of sense gratification. He killed the brothers. Of course, he didn't kill the brothers. Why was she blaming Indra, by the way? Who should she have blamed?
Vishnu.
Why do you think she blamed Indra?
Because he killed the whole Devadatta.
He killed them on behalf of Indra. I think also is that she is married to Kasyapa.
She's pious.
She has some piety, and she's just not going to blame God. It just doesn't, that's my guess, is that just doesn't work for her. So she's blaming an intermediary.
There's something that surprises me here, because she blames Krishna Indra and says his attitude is not good, he's not acting according to his own interest, but then, and she says something about that will take him to hell, but then she decides to kill Indra.
Yes, that's interesting. We're going there. Give us another 5 minutes. So, what does she do? She criticizes Indra. She, what we call, demonizes him. You understand? To demonize someone? In English, we say, give the dog a bad name and then hang it. In other words, before I hurt you, I criticize you to show that you are worthy of being hurt. So I don't just hurt you, I first say how bad you are. You have this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem. This problem. Therefore, you deserve to be punished. So, the result of her feeding her anger and lamentation is she justifies her anger. She convinces herself, logically, that she has a right to be angry. I am holding this anger and lamentation because I'm supposed to. Was she peaceful? It says here, she was not peaceful. I can't have any happiness. I can't rest, I can't be happy. If I say, my dear DT, you can't rest and be happy because you're holding your anger and grief. She'd say, no, I can't rest and be happy because it's Indra's fault that my sons died, and so I have to be angry and lamenting. I must be angry. I must be lamenting. I have to be filled with anger and lamentation because Indra is so bad. Are you all following the psychology? I get a feeling and I feed it. I'm feeding these monkeys, and the monkeys are biting me, the monkeys are scratching me, they are pulling down my wet, clean laundry and getting monkey paws on it. They're breaking my water tank, they're pulling down my electric wires, and I say, I have to keep feeding the monkeys. I have no choice. I have to feed these monkeys. It's not the monkeys that are causing me problem. It's not my feeding the monkeys that are causing me problem. My neighbor sent the monkeys to my house. It's his fault. We rationalize and justify why we're holding on to these negative emotions. I have a right to my anger. I have a right to my grief. I have a right to my fear. Of course I'm angry. We'll say I am angry, like that's my identity. I am afraid. You know, who are you? Anger. Who are you? Fear. She is rationalizing. My dear friends, I have done this, and I have seen so many devotees do this for decades. This person abused children, so I have a right to be angry for 30 years. I gave a donation to the temple and this person used it to buy a car and blew it, and I have a right to be upset for 30 years. You ever met anybody like this? We have a whole lot of them. I have a right. Indra is fond of sense gratification. He's cruel, hard-hearted, and sinful. Do people say that? Indra's a devotee. Do people say that about other devotees that they're angry at? Have you heard this kind of thing? I have a right to be angry. Look at this leader, that guru, that sannyasi, that GVC, that temple president, that whatever, whatever, whatever. They were only interested in sense gratification. Look at the salary they're taking. Look how, what a hard-hearted, cruel, they're not really a devotee. They're just sinful. I have a right to be angry, and I'm going to hold on to my anger and my grief and my lamentation. And then where is the peace? And Krishna says, without peace, you can't be happy. Is Diti happy? No. Is she peaceful? No. What should she be doing instead? What should she be doing? She should do what Chichuketu just did. And she should accept. That's not what she's doing. Now she says when they're dead, these rulers just become worms, stool, or ashes? If one enviously kills others for the protection of such a body, does he actually know his true self-interest of life? So she's saying, again, Indra is such a materialist that he killed my sons for the interest of his own body. By the way, what's her relationship with Indra?
She's the stepmother.
Stepmother and auntie, both. Stepmother and auntie.
They were both sisters?
They were sisters and co-wives. So she was Indra's stepmother and Indra's auntie. Alright, then she says, Indra considers his body eternal, he's become unrestrained. I want to have a son who can remove Indra's madness. Alright, now remember that Parvati wanted to help Chitraketu? But Parvati was coming from a different place. Parvati was coming from a place of, I really want to help him. She wasn't coming from a place of this grief and anger. Does Diti actually want to help Indra, do you think?
No.
I don't think she wants to help him at all. And this is also where we go. I'm angry, I'm fearful, I'm grieving. Often we don't even acknowledge those emotions. Like you said, acknowledging. We often don't even, we're just feeling them. We're just feeling the anger and the grief and the fear. And we're like, that person's terrible, they're sinful, and they should learn a lesson, and they should be reformed. Yeah? Now, who here is in the bodily concept of life?
It is wrong.
No. I'm not that bad of a teacher.
Diti, obviously.
All of you, not me. Diti. Diti's in the mood of, these were my sons. I mean, why couldn't she think that was my nephew? You know, I mean, like, whatever. But she was in the mood that these were my sons. And anyone who kills my son, even my nephew, or my stepson, is my enemy. She was exactly guilty of what she's accusing Indra of. Exactly. She says Indra's willing to kill others for the sake of maintaining his body and his bodily position. So let me kill him for the sake of maintaining my family and bodily position. Does that make any sense?
No.
So when people are overwhelmed, when they're feeding their anger, their grief, their fear, their envy, this is what happens. We come up with any kind of philosophy. Any kind of philosophy to justify what we're doing. And Diti's saying, I'm being very helpful. And I'm helping this poor Indra. I love him. I mean, he's my nephew. I want to help him. He's in the bodily concept. He thinks it's okay to kill people. And, you know, I'm going to help him by killing him. This is what we do. No, I'm not under the control of anger. I'm working on principle. I'm working on justice. I'm working philosophically. This person is a cheater and a rascal. Intense, huh? Very intense. So, she doesn't know how to do this herself. She's not sure how to do it. She thinks if she kills Indra, then Indra will be rectified in her own way of thinking. And she'll be peaceful. By the way, when people get those punished who harm them, does it usually make them peaceful? No. You hear that over and over again, you know. Somebody murders someone in your family and you take them to court and they're convicted, they're put in jail, and the people will always say, I still don't feel peaceful. So Diti's aware that she can't solve this problem on her own. that she can't kill Indra on her own. So she takes up a duplicitous and deceitful tact. Her husband is also the father of Indra. What should she have done? So she should have ignored the anger and grief and let it pass through her. And what could she have done here? Yeah, she could have talked openly with Kasyapa. Hey, you know, my sister's son seems to get the upper hand here, and my sons get killed, and you know, Aditi's sons get heaven, and I'm really sad about this, and you know, can I cry on your shoulder, my dear husband? I'm sure he would have been sympathetic. I mean, seriously. I'm sure he would have been sympathetic. Yeah? He also would have said, I told you so. Said, I told you. He would have said, I predicted this. He would have said, you know, when you were pregnant with those boys, I told you they would be demons, and so you didn't even want to give birth to them. And I told you that Vishnu would kill them, and I told you that you'd have a great grandson who would be a wonderful devotee. I told you all. You put this in motion. Why are you getting angry at Indra for your own decisions and for destiny? He could have acted as Patiguru to her. Do you think Kasyapa is capable of being Patiguru? Of course. He's the father of Vamadeva. So of course he could have acted that way and helped her, but she didn't do that. She went to the right person. She went to her very exalted husband. But she didn't go to him honestly. She didn't go to him with her real problem. Instead, she pretends that everything's fine. She hides her anger. What's she doing with it? She's repressing it, isn't it? She's repressing her anger. She's repressing her love. It's still there. It's still churning. But she's repressing it, she's not dealing with it, she's not letting it go. And she's pretending that everything's nice and sweet. In fact, she's pretending that she's really, really happy, and she's really, really happy with her husband. And naturally, if somebody serves us nicely and is kind to us, we feel obliged to them. This is natural. And not just between a husband and wife, but anybody. Which is why Prabhupada said the sannyasi shouldn't have women serving him. But it's just a natural thing, yes? If someone's kind to me and somebody's taking care of me, then I feel gratitude. Yeah? And so, this is what's happening. And in this case, Prabhupada's talking about specifically the relationship between man and woman, that Kasyapa loses his intelligence. That somehow he's not able to pick up what's going on. I mean, Kasyapa's he's a great yogi, and he should be able to discern the emotions of Diti. That somehow he becomes bewildered and he's not able to do that. So Kasyapa is so happy. He's like, I'm so happy with what you're doing. And what would you like? And he offers just any benediction without any kind of conditions.
What is that?
That's 32. Why does he do that? Why does he say, you know, you can have anything you want from me? There's a word here. Why he says that. 32. What's Kasyapa's reason for giving, for saying to his wife, you can have whatever you want? He calls her a what?
Irreproachable.
Irreproachable means you have no fault. We trust people in our lives, especially we tend to trust our family. And if you don't trust your family, it's kind of hard to function. You live in the same house as your family, you know, they have access to your money, they have access to the kitchen knives. I mean, you know, you trust them. They have the key to the house. If you can't trust anybody, it's kind of hard. The same thing, it's my wife and she's being really nice. What would you like? Anything you like? Who else gave benedictions like this? You can have whatever you want.
Lord Ramachandra took his wife. Yes, that's why when she asked him, well, I want my son to be the king and not... Ramachandra, I mean the father. That's a,
yes. So Dasarath with Kaikeyi.
Yeah.
It was another one where he said, we call it carte blanche. That means it's a white card. Huh?
Green card.
Green card. Not a green card, white card. It's empty. It's like you might call it a blank check. We give you a check to the bank, we sign it, but we don't put a number on it. Call it carte blanche. You can have whatever you want. So Dasarath did this with Kaikeyi. You can have whatever you want. Another example of somebody who did that.
Kruvera to Dhruva.
What?
Kruvera to Dhruva.
In that case, it worked out well. Dasarath did this with somebody else too. Yeah?
Actually, Dasarath didn't want it, but before Ram was born, before Kaikeyi gained some high king or something, Dasarath was promised to Kaikeyi, and she said, in future, if I need like that, so I will ask him.
Yes, but the point is that Dasarath said to her, I will give you whatever you want. It was carte blanche. If Dasarath had said to her, thank you for saving my life, I will give you this, 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 or this. It's very different from I will give you whatever you want. That's just open. You understand? It's probably called carte blanche. It's blank. Dasarath did this to someone else too. Said you can have whatever you want. And then he was sorry. Vishvamrita. He said to Vishvamrita, you can have whatever you want. He said, okay, great, Ram and Lakshman. Like, no!
And also, Lord Nityananda's father.
Yes, Lord Nityananda's father also said this to the sannyasi, I'll give you whatever you want. He said, great, Lord Nityananda, you know.
Your son.
Take your son. So, you know, we have these examples of, I'll give you whatever you want. And most of the time, they don't turn out very well. This idea of take whatever you want.
Bali
to Mamandev was another example. Take whatever you want. And Bali was a little proud. He said, ask from me something so great that you'll never need to ask anybody else for anything ever. And the only person who can say that is
God.
Ask me for something so great you'll never need to ask anyone else for anything ever. So, yes. So Kasyapa does this, you can have whatever you want. Now, what would be more intelligent would be to say, I'd like to give you something. Why don't you tell me what you like and I'll see if I'm willing to give it to you. If you want to have it open, if you just don't want to say, I'll give you whatever jewelry you want or something like that, it could be, please tell me what you want and if I can do that, I'll do my best to do it. Hedge it a little bit instead of I'll just give you anything. There's only one, you know, only a few people we should say, I'll give you whatever you want. To whom should we say, I'll give you whatever you want? Krishna and Guru, that's it. Even Guru, you can not give some things. If the Guru says get married, you can say no. So there are some things you can say no. Okay. And then Kasyapa glorifies. Kasyapa also, I'm afraid, gets into a little bit of Bali's mood. Of you know, I'm so great that I can give you whatever you want. He gets into that a little bit. And he says, what cannot be obtained by a chaste wife? The husband is like God to her. You know, my dear wife, I am just like God for you. And you are so chaste. I can give you something that unchaste women can't even dream of, because I am your God. So we have a little male ego run amok here with that. So we you can see that you have kind of the negative sides of the male and female psychology here operating, that the Diti is using her feminine nature to deceive her husband, and then her husband's using the male psychology to do something he really shouldn't be doing, to be promising something he really shouldn't be promising. So that was the main thing I wanted to talk about here is, you know, we really have to see this danger of feeding our negative emotions and justifying it based on this or that or the other thing. Who do we hurt when we do that?
Ourselves.
And what's the main thing that we can't get when we do that? Krishna. We cannot attain Krishna consciousness if we feed our negative emotions. It will never happen. If we rationalize them, we feed them, we repress them, it just won't happen. Bhagavad Gita 2:62, what does Krishna say? First we contemplate, then we become attached. Then we become lusty. Then we become angry. Then we become bewildered. We lose our intelligence and we fall into the material pool. This is exactly what's happened to Diti. She thought about it. My kids are dead. My kids are dead. Why are they dead? Vishnu killed them. Why would Vishnu kill my kids? He did it for Indra. That's why he did it. He did it for Indra. Yeah. That Indra, he's the problem. My kids would be alive if it wasn't for Indra. I have to do something about this. This is ridiculous. You know, Indra's just envious of my kids. He doesn't respect my part of the family. You know, he's just envious. He's not really a devotee. You know. That Indra. You know those stories about Indra, right? I mean, he's just into his own sense gratification. He's just into his own body. I mean, everybody goes around praising him. You know, he's actually kind of cruel. He needs to be fixed, you know? He needs to be fixed. And I think the only way to fix him is to kill him. And this is what happens. Does our mind do this kind of thing? How often does our mind do this kind of thing? A lot. Yes? And we lose our intelligence. And instead of thinking about Krishna, instead of acting like Chitraketu, who thinks about, I mean, Chitraketu could have gone down this route. So I'm cursed to be a demon, huh? Well, what's this cursing to be a demon? Look, I was given this airplane by the Lord himself. I was given this demigod body, I was given the airplane and all these women, and this is the gift of God. Who does she think she is taking this away from me? And for what? I mean, you know, she's just a sense gratifier there with her husband in front of all these sages. How dare she do this? You know, I need to teach this Parvati a lesson. She's definitely out of line here. Could he have done that? He could have. Would that have made sense? Yeah, logically, sure. But Diti's thinking here makes a lot of logical sense. Is it true? No, and even if it was true, does it help her?
No.
No, not at all. It doesn't help her at all. In fact, it's hurting her terribly. She's even saying, I have no peace, I can't rest, and I'm not happy. And what did we read this morning? Prabhupada said how to be happy, right? You all read that in that purport? How to be happy. Don't go down that route. 264, Krishna says, have your mind free from attachment and aversion. This also means, my dear friends, not rationalizing being averse to the anger and the grief and the fear and the envy either. She talks herself into them. We don't want to either talk ourselves into them or out of them. They're not ours. So nor should it be philosophizing about why I shouldn't be angry. Well, I really shouldn't be angry because it was my fault for approaching my husband in the evening and having those demoniac kids, and I already knew that Vishnu was going to kill them, so I really shouldn't be angry. This anger isn't very good. Preaching to ourselves about why we shouldn't be angry or shouldn't be grieving just takes it and does this. So we preach to ourselves about why we should be angry and we should be grieving and we should be fearful does this. And preaching to ourselves about why we shouldn't be feeling those things does this. Are we actually feeling those things?
Can you please repeat?
Am I, the soul, actually feeling anger, grief, fear, envy, lamentation? Am I feeling those things?
I feel that we can also do that.
That this and this are both Maya. Am I feeling them?
So is it
an illusion? No. Are they mine?
No.
No. Do I need to philosophize why I should be feeling them or why I shouldn't be feeling them? No. Who is feeling them? The mind. This is what Chitraketu was talking about. This is what Lord Ananta was talking about. And after describing philosophically, Ananta describes this, Lord Anantadev and Chitraketu. Now we're getting an example of someone who doesn't get this.
Who doesn't get it?
No. Diti did not go to the class about Chitraketu and Ananta. And if she did, she was chatting with somebody on her phone or falling asleep. She wasn't listening when Lord Anantadev and Chitraketu said, what is the actual nature of happiness and distress? It's not ours. I don't think she read the Bhagavad Gita either. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, who remains neutral, knowing that the modes alone are active. Oh, there's Krishna's monkeys. There's anger. Have you ever seen one of the monkeys that could look like anger to you?
Yes.
Yeah. This is your homework. So when you walk back to wherever you're staying, see if you see a monkey that looks like anger. See if you see a monkey that looks like fear. See if you see a monkey that looks like lamentation. See if you see a monkey that looks like envy. Do you think you'll probably see that?
Yes.
When these feelings enter the body and the mind, oh, that's the anger monkey. I remember him. I saw him on the walk home on October 24th. Oh, there's the lamentation monkey. You ever see the lamentation monkeys?
Yes.
There's the fear monkey. They're not mine. They're
Krishna's.
They're his business. Hey, Krishna. There's anger. Mr. Anger Monkey, Mr. Grief Monkey is jumping around in my body. Hey, Krishna. These are your monkeys. They're not mine. I'm not going to feed them, and I'm not going to throw rocks at them. I'm not going to give philosophical reasons why I should feed them, and I'm not going to give philosophical reasons why I should throw rocks at them.
Throw what?
Rocks at them. They are yours. If you want them to hang around and jump around in my body is also yours. That's your business. And if you're ready to have them move on to the next street, that's your business. I respect them as your monkeys, and I let them go. They're not mine. They're not me. I am not experiencing material emotions. I am not. It's like I'm watching a movie where the hero is in trouble and I think it's my fear. It's not me. It is a dream. So we're taking now, Sukadeva is taking this philosophy of detachment, acceptance, equanimity, which is not aversion, and he's giving us a story now of where people did not do it. So he showed us Chitraketu did it. Now let's see somebody who didn't do it. Now, of course, eventually they do it, so it does have a happy ending. Don't worry. Everybody becomes friends in the end. All right? So, tomorrow, Kasyapa Muni comes up with a very intelligent way about how to solve this problem.
So we'll use 36?
Tomorrow we're going to do 37 to 55, which finishes now in the morning, and then the afternoon we'll finish the chapter. And tomorrow afternoon is when this gets rectified. And finally, DT and Indra will do the right thing. All right, so we will see you tomorrow.
Mataji, Vasishtha was the son of Brahma.